Mia, this is a work of love and a passion project that has taken you many months, but it is such a glorious achievement, both funnier and far more intelligent and wise and learned and helpful than it needs to be. Thank you for talking with me about it and bringing along your pocket dramaturg, Kate Pitt.
Well, obviously, I never go anywhere without her.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. I'm Austin Titchener, co-artistic director of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, now in its 18th year, episode 900, Stick Figure Hamlet. For this landmark 900th episode of the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, I'm thrilled to talk to good friend Mia Gosling, the creator of the Good Tickle Brain Shakespeare Web comic, about her new book, A Stick Figure Hamlet, which tells the story of Shakespeare's play in Mia's trademark hand-drawn style, but with so many insights and asides and paraphrases and footnotes. It is an epic achievement and already being used by teachers, but is also just a marvelously fun read that made me laugh out loud, and I picked up a few things I didn't know. Mia and her pocket dramaturg Kate Pitt chatted with me about how her unreduced magnum opus came to be.
I was planning for it to be just another sort of collection of the Hamlet comics I'd already posted to my website. But when I sat down with Kate and we started sort of working through all the little extra fun tidbits we wanted to include, it became very clear that it was going to be rather more pages than allowed for a folded in half stapled booklet. So we had to shell out the big bucks to get it perfect bound.
It's glorious. And can you describe the madness, I'm sorry, the passion that drives you to create these stick figure versions of Shakespeare's plays?
I mean, for me, it's mostly just wanting other people to see the fun that I see in a particular play, because I view Shakespeare as a source of fun. I don't really view it as a great source of, you know, universal humanity or something dire like that. I see it as entertainment and fun and lighthearted, and I like to share that with people. And so I brought that same sensibility to Hamlet and just told it in a way that I thought was entertaining and clear and brought out all the things I find hilarious about Hamlet. And then when we put the book together, we decided to do that times 10 with all the fun tidbits about Hamlet and about past productions of Hamlet and about the history of behind Hamlet, and just kind of crammed it all in there as much as possible.
Well, and I think I know Hamlet pretty well, and yet I learned many things about not only the text of Hamlet, but various productions of Hamlet. I didn't know that much about the various versions of Hamlet. It always felt to me like the folio is not the definitive version of the play. It's just all the versions of the play. How old is Hamlet? He's all these ages, because that's how he's been done in all the productions. How heavy is he? He's all the weight, because that's how it's been done. Mia, did you know all this stuff ahead of time, or did you pull Kate Pitt out of your pocket and she told you?
A mixture, for sure. Like, I was aware of a lot of these things ahead of time. For example, we have a whole page and ongoing commentary on the fact that there are multiple texts of Hamlet. But working with a pocket dramaturg, which is a luxury that I highly recommend people, I was able to sort of like dive deeper into that and get into the weeds and really work with Kate on figuring out, okay, so what choices are the most prevalent in production? What are the implications of making one choice over another? And it was really fun to sort of explore that in more depth.
Well, and to bring Kate, or to drag Kate into this conversation, you are a bit of an expert on Hamlet for sure, because you have been the dramaturg for not only Stick Figure Hamlet, but for the comedy of Hamlet, a prequel formerly titled Hamlet's Big Adventure, a prequel. What do you feel about these various impertinences being committed against this play by both myself and Mia?
They're wonderful. It's an honor to swim about in the caves that are your brains. Yeah, I mean, I love the way that both of you as artists and creators sort of transform the subject. I love that in both we ended up having very intense Ophelia conversations. Mm-hmm. I think it's an interesting similarity that I can see having done both of them. And yeah, it was great to be able to, I think all of us have just so much Shakespeare fun facts and trivia floating around our brains at all times, that having a place to put them was very satisfying. And I could trust that I could give Mia 30 pages of fun facts about Hamlet, and she would pull out what was interesting and useful. That was really a joy to be able to just sort of data dump and then collaboratively sort of pick through and find out what was useful.
Well, useful, and I also love the word fun, because Mia, that absolutely comes off the page, your sense of fun about the play, because I can imagine, I'm reading it with a certain sense of familiarity with the play, and I'm delighting in all the jokes, but I can imagine, and the fun facts I didn't know, but I can imagine a high school kid or a middle school kid being forced to read Hamlet, or a college kid being forced to read Hamlet for the first time, finding this extremely useful as not only a paraphrase of each scene, but with some actual quotes, but as a way of demystifying the conversation around this play and taking not only the play, but the conversations about the play off their highfalutin pedestals.
Yeah, and I'd say that's definitely something that is in the back of my mind when I'm putting together these books, because the core of it is my own retelling of the play, and that's usually done in my language, but I try and include as many direct quotes as possible to tie it back into the original text so you can see, okay, this is a line that's important, or it's a line that's famous and stands out sort of like an anchor. But all the extra material that I've put in there, and it's about almost 50% extra material at this point, I really like the idea of someone who's maybe not as familiar with Hamlet as I am sitting down with this and getting this kind of cool behind the scenes look at the play. Like, it's not exactly what you see when you see it performed. It's not necessarily all the stuff that you will learn if you study in high school or college. It's just like some extra nitty gritty nerdiness behind the scenes stuff, which has always appealed to me, because I'll see a play and then I'll find out a cool fact about, you know, what maybe influenced it or what's often been done with it. And I think those are the really cool things that help me feel more connected to the material somehow. And also, I think with a play like Hamlet, which is, you know, so up on a pedestal, one of the themes that Kate and I kept returning to is like, there's no correct answer. And I feel like that's a really important point to hammer home with anybody who's studying Hamlet or engaging with Hamlet for the first time. It's like, there is no definitive Hamlet. There is no correct answer to choices that you make in the play itself. There's no correct answer to what text you use. And I love this idea of really pushing the fact that in Shakespeare in general, there is no correct answer. And the idea of there being a definitive Shakespeare anything is just anathema to me and what I believe in.
I love that, because it reminds us all that these plays are plays and they need to be seen up on their feet, ideally more than read. I remember reading that some people didn't like Denzel Washington's Macbeth because it wasn't Shakespeare's Macbeth. And I am in agreement with you. There is no such thing as Shakespeare's Macbeth or Shakespeare's Hamlet until an actor gets on his feet and starts to play it. that's Shakespeare's Macbeth, however it comes up.
Yeah, and I think that's where sort of working with Kate was really helpful, because you know, I have the experience of the productions of Hamlet I've seen over my life, you know, some dozen or 16. But Kate really has the knowledge and the resource to dig deep and look at, you know, Victorian era productions, you know, Restoration era productions, and like combing through all the material we have on production history of Hamlet and sort of synthesize like, okay, this choice was made during this time period. This was the popular way to stage this scene, and just pull together all this cool production history stuff that I was able to draw on and really sort of make my case of like, these are all choices, but nothing is definitive.
Well, Mia, you come to Shakespeare, I believe, as a fan. But Kate, did you first come as a fan, or do you come to Shakespeare as a scholar, an academic?
Absolutely as a fan.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm not a scholar or an academic. I'm someone who really loves Shakespeare. And to Mia's point about sort of the theater history, I was delighted by the number of truly bonkers 19th century theater anecdotes she let me sneak into this version of Hamlet, because it's my favorite period, the period I studied in school, and it's completely insane. Like, someone threw half a sheep on stage in the middle of Hamlet. That's in the book. Someone couldn't find a skull and used a turnip instead, and then it fell from their hands and fell into the footlights and caught on fire. Crazy things happened during the productions of this play, and they make me so happy. So I'm delighted that Austin, you learned something new in setting it, and I'm grateful to Mia that she let me include so many wonderful tidbits of truly insane theater history into this.
I was never going to leave out the burning turnip.
Hi, I'm Lawrence O'Donnell, and you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSC? We'll be performing The Complete History of Comedy Abridged this month at Hillsdale College and the Dogwood Center for the Performing Arts in Michigan on March 21st and 23rd, and the American Theater in Hampton, Virginia on April 12th, and the Hilton Performing Arts Center in Fairfax, Virginia on April 13th, 2024. Check out the touring page at our website, reducedshakespeare.com, or our social media pages for venue and ticket information. And now back to my conversation with Mia Gosling and her pocket dramaturg, Kate Pitt, talking about Mia's new epic, A Stick Figure Hamlet.
Is Hamlet a great play or just an influential play?
A great play.
Great in the sense of large, or great in the sense of really wonderful?
Both.
I mean, the trap I think you've fallen with Hamlet and with other like Shakespeare, the ones that everybody knows, like Romeo and Juliet, is they're done so often and they're, you know, referred to so often and they're just everywhere. And at some point, certainly with me and Romeo and Juliet, I got to a point where I was just like, I don't really like this play anymore. And then I sat down and I did a adaptation of it myself. I was like, you know what? Actually, this is kind of a good play. It's got a lot of good stuff in it. And I feel like definitely with Hamlet, it was not actually a play that really interested me very much. It was, you know, I was like this guy whining for 4 hours or something. But when I sat down and worked through it and adapted it in stick figure form, I did gain an appreciation for it. And I think it's an appreciation that you lose with overfamiliarity sometimes. And just being able to go back to the text and like look at it and read it and think, okay, what's saying here? Like, what is the language like? And I feel like that kind of engagement with it sort of freshens my perspective and it makes me less jaded about it, because I think you can't do an adaptation like this about a play until you really stop and try and see it with fresh eyes. And that definitely helps.
I struggle with the question because it is one of those plays, Hamlet is one of those plays that is so hard to successfully realize, because there are so many different aspects to it. I've seen more completely successful productions of Pericles than I have of Hamlet. And I'm not sure what that says about the greatness of either of those two plays, but nobody's arguing that Pericles is a great play.
I think Pericles is a wonderful play.
Great.
It's bonkers, but it has some fantastically beautiful stuff in it.
I came out of the production in 1989 with Nigel Terry playing the title role of Pericles at the Swan in Stratford-upon-Avon, came walking out going, why do we not all understand that Pericles is the greatest of Shakespeare's plays? It was such a great production.
And I mean, I think that's the really fun thing about any Shakespeare, and Hamlet particularly, is just the range that you can have with the characters. So I saw a Hamlet 2 years ago now, which had like one of the most sympathetic Poloniuses I've ever seen, where you got the sense that he was this caring but hassled father, and he was just trying to do the right thing, and he was kind of overwhelmed by the situation in which he found himself in, and he was making the bad choices but for the right reasons. And it was, you know, one of the first times I was like, oh, Polonius, he's just a dad trying to do what he thinks is best for people. And yeah, usually I'm annoyed by Polonius. He's played as kind of like a blustering comic relief, and I never kind of connect with him. But in this production, I did. And I think that's the fun thing, is you can really push all the characters into shapes where you don't connect or shapes where you do. And every single production you see is going to have a different take on that. So even plays that I've written off that I'm not interested in really seeing again, like Timon of Athens, I will go and see it again, because there's always this chance that this is going to be the production that blows the whole play open for me.
Yeah. And that feels like it's to your point, Austin, about Pericles almost has the opportunity to be surprising and excellent, because as an audience member, I go in with very few expectations.
Yeah.
I don't know if that character is supposed to be a bad guy or supposed to be a doddering old fool. There's the option that they can be anything. Whereas every time I go into Hamlet, I have in my head, oh, Polonius is a doddering old fool. So every director has to make the choice to play into the audience's expectations.
Yeah.
Or like make him a Machiavel. That would be a really interesting choice. But because the audience comes in with so much baggage, every production consciously has to lean in or lean away or stand in the middle of what the audience comes into in a way that with Pericles, they don't. And that's part of what's great about Hamlet and what's great about the comic form, and that in the outtakes, we could say, okay, we've made this choice in the text. We've chosen Sullied or Sallied or something else. But here's the way to show the working, to show what it could be in a way that you can't necessarily do in theater, where you have to make one choice in the staging. And then you commit to it. It'll be different every night, but there's one choice in the staging. You see the ghost or you don't. But the comic allows all the options to be presented, which is exciting.
All right. So final question. Who's your favorite Hamlet that you've ever seen? And I'm not asking for you to pick me. Who is your favorite Hamlet you've ever seen in production and why?
So I managed to see Paul Gross's Hamlet at the Stratford Festival back in, I think, 2000. And that was before I'd seen Slings and Arrows or knew who Paul Gross was. So I knew he was like, oh, this is like this TV star and whatever. But I enjoyed his Hamlet in a way that I hadn't really connected with other Hamlets before. I think there was this sort of like confused vulnerability about his portrayal, which was very appealing. And it was a more appealing Hamlet, I think, than a lot of them that I'd seen. Because a lot of times I do get very, very annoyed with Hamlet. And I just, I don't really care. But his one managed to be particularly vulnerable in a way that I responded well to. So that off the top of my head, that might be one of my top Hamlets.
I don't have a favorite Hamlet that I've seen live. I do love the film, if you can find it, of the Andrew Scott Hamlet. I think he sort of manages to be transparent with the text in a really, really beautiful way. I think I've talked about before on this podcast, how seeing Jude Law when I was in high school was like a formative experience, but also because he was hot and Jude Law and looked like a blonde god. So when he said, "No more like my father than I to Hercules," I was like, that doesn't make any sense. So I've seen interesting Hamlets, but I haven't seen one live that I absolutely adored, but I look forward to doing so.
The interesting thing about Andrew Scott's is it is this very sort of un-Shakespearean delivery, but you do get the sense that he is completely trying to figure out what to do next in his own head. And like, I think he takes it to extremes, like trying to like catch the words out of the air and put things together. So he really pushes that boundary. But from the bits that I've seen, it really does feel like, oh, he is just putting this together in his head right now and saying it in a way that a lot of, I think that's a hard thing to achieve with Shakespeare. And he does that the best. And, you know, you can argue and that's not always the most effective way to do it. And it does mess up the language a bit in ways that I don't necessarily like. But as far as like someone who's completely confused and overwhelmed with the situation, trying to figure out what's going on and articulate it, I think it's a really good performance that way.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, except for one more thing, which I'll share with you in about 60 seconds, so stick around. Mia Gosling's A Stick Figure Hamlet is both a must-read and a great gift, and is on sale online now. Go to goodticklebrain.com for more information. Then send us your comic reinterpretations via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. Or throw a comment to us over on the socials or on our own actual website, reducedshakespeare.com, or visit my website, theshakespeareance.com. You can also follow Mia Gosling on all the socials @GoodTickleBrain. Thanks, as always, to befuddled old Machiavel Matthew Croak, web services by Ginger Power Limited, music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Pam O'Shea Wing. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to MSNBC's Lawrence O'Donnell. And as always, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 927/100 of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
The thing that also struck me about it is forget about the drawing and the writing and the formatting. The making it fit, that's a huge amount of work.
Yeah, I'm glad you recognize that. That's like the most amount of work, yes.
The back matter is so dense.
Baby got back matter?
Yeah.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.